change to a step higher, and you achieve those goals, then you set further goals for yourself?
Yeah, I did. You know, one thing I'd like to back up on, because I overlooked it, and it's so darn important, and that's the issue of mentorship. The fellow that hired me, Bob Boyd, at Oldbury Electrochemical Company, in the merger also joined Hooker. And eventually he became the sales manager of Hooker's phosphate division and was living in Louisville, which was part of my territory. And so Bob, as a boss, was a tough sort of a curmudgeon kind of guy. He was never unfair. He was just a bit of a curmudgeon. And but I liked him, and I had a lot of respect for him. And, of course, he hired me, so he had to be brilliant. But when I started going down to Louisville, he didn't travel too much. I spent a lot of time with him during those 4 or 5 years that he was living in Louisville. And I was traveling down there, you know, say every 6 weeks. Frequently I'd stay at their house and make sales calls from there. And, I mean, we'd sit up at night with a bottle of bourbon and finish half of it and just talk about business and what had gone on. And, I mean, he had such a dramatic influence on my life. He was from Iowa, had gone to Iowa State. He was a chemical engineer. He had had a long selling experience in the New York City area and also out in the territory. And he probably did more to expand my horizons on thinking about what my capabilities were and how you sell. And it was all done in a very, very informal way. So I had that sort of in my kit bag when I became district sales manager. And going from being a salesman to a manager is a very, very significant transition. I think that people that grow up in manufacturing, for example, that are college educated and come into a system in some supervisory fashion are supervising almost from the day they arrive at work. They probably have a training program, but maybe they're a foreman in some plants or they're an assistant superintendent. In sales, that's not the case. You've been out, you know, dealing with your customers and the public at large, and now all of a sudden you step into this role where you have a responsibility for people in a way that you haven't had it before. Frankly, I've seen a lot of guys fail at this. Sometimes the best salesmen make the worst sales managers. So that transition was, I won't say it was difficult, but it was very, very challenging. And I had some characters that worked for me, some guys that had been around for a while, and trying to keep the chickens herded up sometimes wasn't exactly easy, but And now it's 1964, and the chemical industry is growing at a rate that's almost incomprehensible. I mean, it was the real go-go time of the industry. And so it was a time at which if you had any kind of capability, you moved relatively quickly through an organization. Organizations were expanding, staffs were being built. We were probably at the front end of what we're now doing on the back end of downsizing. We were building these huge organizations sort of fashioned off the military Prussian model of staff support and a whole variety of things. So there were just all sorts of jobs. So now, in terms of what my thoughts were, I figured I'd be a district manager probably for 4 or 5, 6 years and then maybe move into some kind of a central management job at the home office in Niagara Falls. Things move much faster than that. And I'll tell you, the one thing I've learned in my life is once you've been through a major organizational change and you say to yourself, well, things are going to settle down, you're wrong. They don't settle down. They just start all over again. Because you can almost say, well, you know, we got that behind us. We don't have to worry about that. Excuse me. So here I am. I'm a district manager. I've got all these guys. We're making good progress. Hooker has a major reorganization. Called me up to Niagara Falls. This was 1965, I guess, late 65. and said, look, you're doing a good job down there. We like what you're doing, but we think we got some other things. We want you to move to Niagara Falls, and we want you to become an industry marketing manager for the pulp and paper industry, the metals industry, and the oil industry, all of which I had had some exposure to. I remember kidding. I said, geez, Niagara Falls. This was the general manager of the division who was a kind of a character. I said, you mean move to Niagara Falls? And he kind of was stunned, and he looked at me and he said, boy, you must have thought you'd move here at some point. And I said, yeah. I said, I really thought about it, but I never really thought it would happen. I was pulling his leg. And I said, no, I'll be delighted to move to Niagara Falls. And frankly, moving to Niagara Falls was a wonderful experience. We lived out in Lewiston and later in Youngstown. I lived there twice. It was a great place to raise kids, a great place to grow up. But again, it was, we lived out the country. And the job was fascinating. It involved both Canada and the United States. I did a lot of traveling. And really what my job was to support the field sales force in developing both their relationships and product lines for those three industries that I mentioned. And it was sort of the first stint at the home office to see sort of what the political landscape was. You didn't see as much politics out of the field as you did as once you got in the house under the same wall. So I have to say, Hooker was not a highly political organization. Having talked to guys at Dow and DuPont and people, companies like that that were much larger, they seemed to be much more politicized. But it had politics, but, you know, I was young and aggressive, and now I had another mentor. When I was in Cincinnati, before I got this district sales manager's job, a guy by the name of Jim Baldwin joined the company from what was the old Penn Salt organization. Hotshot guy, marketing guy, bright guy, gone to University of Washington, Harvard Business School. I remember meeting him for the first time down at the Masonette restaurant. He flew in there late one night. We were having dinner with a customer, and he came in and met us. But anyway, for whatever reasons, he took a liking to me, and I spent a lot of time with Jim. He was very, very demanding, but he was a lot of fun to be with. And we became pretty good friends. And he really was a guy that pushed my career hard. And he was the guy that was involved in that first step from district manager to industry marketing manager. He wanted to get me up into the home office where they could take a look and see how capable I was. And he also was a great support. He got into cracks later with Dr. Hammer, but that's another story. Anyway, I had that industry management job. And in 1967, late-ish, we had an operation on the West Coast in Tacoma, Washington, and we also had a Canadian company. And for whatever reasons, they used to have a West Coast manager, but in this reorganization where I came to Niagara Falls, they decided to do away with that. They had each of the functional people out on the West Coast report back to the sales manager, the production manager. And I wasn't working. And we had a board member who had been the former chairman of the company who lived in Seattle. And he was starting to get a lot of feedback from some of his customer friends, like the guys at Rainier and St. Regis, that, Jesus Christ, what the hell's going on down there? Nobody's in charge. Everybody's sort of milling around at the Hooker operations. And he'd come back to the board meetings, and I guess two or three board meetings, he just said, what the hell's going on? So this happened a few times, and finally the current president of the company was getting rankled, so he called down and said, you know, what the hell's going on in the West Coast? Is anybody in charge out there? To make a long story short, they called me in early part of 68 and said, look, we've got to do something out west. There's a leadership void out there. We don't want to change the concept of having the people report functionally, but we'd like to put you out there as a manager, and they'll have a tandem reporting relationship. They'll report to you. You'll coordinate the whole Western operations, but we want them to have that reporting relationship back, sort of early matrix concept that Dow had. That's fine. Well, with the time changes, 3-hour time change and everything else, it doesn't take very long, frankly, for the people who are really reporting to you. They're staying in touch back. And you have to finesse that back at the Niagara Falls location with the people they report to so that nobody knows this get out of joint. But frankly, it was the best job I ever had. We had never been lived in the West Coast. We moved to Tacoma. It was a marvelous time for us. And the people out there were just super. I mean, just incredibly good people. And they were very experienced. We had great plant operations. Our Canadian operations were growing. We were expanding. The pulp industry was expanding. We were a major factor in the pulp industry. We shipped stuff by barge to Alaska and up to the coast. So it was terrific. And it was sort of my first now experience having manufacturing responsibility as well as sales and marketing experience. So that was very good. We had two great manufacturing guys, one in Vancouver, Bud Schnurstein, who had been with the company probably 25 years, and another guy, John Judy, in Tacoma, who eventually went up and ran the packing plant. And so I spent some time there. When I went out, they said to me, don't plan on staying out there too long. They said, the problem, you get to the West Coast, nobody wants to come back. It's too nice. And they said, we don't expect you to be out there long, but we want you to get this concept started of this matrix reporting, and we think you can do that. I think I did it relatively well, and within 2 years, I was brought back as assistant division manager for the electrochemical division. By now, during this process, you are thinking about promotion. But frankly, I will have to say that each of these promotions in this period came much sooner than I thought they would. A lot of it had to do with the rate at which the industry was growing, the concept of organization that was evolving in many of the American companies. And even IBM, as you recall, was called I've Been Moved. That was the period when they moved everybody at least every 2 years, and I was on that fast track. I came back to Niagara Falls, and I had spoken to Baldwin, who I mentioned before, who was sort of, by then, he had been, he was president of the company, about the fact that I lacked academic training in business. And I talked to him one night, we went out and had a couple of drinks, and I said, you know, I've been seriously thinking about taking a leave of absence in my graduate school. He says, you can't afford it. No, he's probably right. He says, you can't afford it. He said, you know, you'll give up 2 years of your life, and what the hell happens to your track? He says, let me think about it. This is when I was in Tacoma, so he recommended I go to the Harvard Advanced Management Program. And the first application they made, I was only 35. Their criteria is 40 and up in those days. And so they declined my application the first time. But they sent back and they said, if a year from now you're still interested in having John come to Harvard, and if there's an indication that he's going to be promoted, we'll consider his application. Well, that'll happen. I came back to be an assistant division manager. They made the application, so we moved to Niagara Falls. The following day, I went to Harvard, which my wife has never forgiven me for, because she's had three kids, boxes, and the whole mess, and I went away for 13 weeks. And that also, I have to say, it was a profound experience. The association with much older, more experienced executives. I was the second youngest in the class. Jim Barnes, who runs NAPCO, was the youngest. He was with Conoco in those days. But they were just terrific people, and they were from all around the world. You know, 25% of the class was international. I had done some international traveling at that point, not much. I did a lot later. But for me, the biggest part of it was the financial section, accounting, finance. Those were areas where I was just beginning to learn. You know, the job on the West Coast was really the first time I had really ever had to get concerned about a balance sheet and a P&L. So Harvard refined that. I made some great contacts. As a matter of fact, I was in Singapore last year. One of the guys in our class is now the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court in Singapore. I had a nice visit with him. But I came back from that now into this new assistant general manager's job. And about this time, I started to get some feints from other companies as to whether I might be interested in other jobs. And the early stages of those, I may have waved most of them away because my career had been progressing at such a rapid rate. I didn't feel I was being deprived or underpaid. You know, the pay came along, was never spectacular, but it wasn't bad. And, you know, you got to a certain point where you got stock options. But during that period of the 70s, now Occidental Petroleum had acquired Hooker, the famous Dr. Hammer. And there was a great honeymoon, and Tom Lillers, who was the CEO of Hooker, who executed the transaction, became the president of Occidental. And I won't say anything unkind on tape, but to make a long story short, he tried to do a palace coup, and he got shot in the head by Hammer and fired within 9 months and was gone. Then we watched a succession of five presidents at Occidental within 4 years. We watched three presidents of Hooker Chemical get fired in 3 years. By now, I'm a division manager running the electrochemical division. And PPG called me and asked me whether I'd like to come and talk to them. Vince Sarney was then just president of chemical division. He wanted me to come down and be vice president of sales. I almost took that job. But I said to myself, you know, I can't go out on a Monday morning and compete with the same guys I worked with for 20 years. Through last Friday, I said, that just doesn't work. We aborted that. I ran the, as I said, the electrochemical division. We were expanding. We were building new chlorine capacity at Taft, Louisiana. We were putting in a new chlorine plant at Niagara Falls. So it was a pretty exciting time. Again, it was grow, grow, go, go. Occidental's balance sheet was a disaster, and then all of a sudden, it got to be impossible to get any kind of capital approved in Los Angeles. In 1973, we had another reorganization. I had been division manager probably then for about a year or two. Had turned down two or three other jobs outside, one with Calgon, to become executive vice president. Reorganization bell rang again. Another president got fired, a new president appointed. And all of a sudden, I find myself a group vice president in charge of all the operations around the world. There were two of us. One had the staff side, and I had the line side. And I was very excited about that. But again, the problem was Los Angeles. There was such turmoil in the parent company. And every time we tried to get something accomplished, we'd have to go out to Los Angeles, and we'd have to go out and fight with all these staff guys that didn't understand the damn business. And it was a very, very difficult and trying time for the Hooker management.
You were still based in
Niagara. Still in Niagara Falls. Yeah, I had been in Niagara Falls then from 1970 on until I left Hooker in the end of 75. And frankly, what happened in early 75, Baldwin, who had been fired a few years earlier, was at Airco. And Jim called me and said, look, are you tired of the politics of that company? He said, you know, I lived it. I know what you've been going through. And I said, Jim, I really am. I said, I go out and hammer my head against the wall in Los Angeles sometimes twice a month to try to get things done, and it's just very, very frustrating. So he said, well, look, I had breakfast this morning with our chairman and president, and they're looking for a guy that's about your age, your experience. I told them about you. Would you be interested in just coming down and talking to us? I don't know where it's going to lead. So I said, Jim, I think I'm ready to have a conversation. So that was February. From February until November, I talked to Airco about leaving Hooker. It was a very, very difficult decision. We started to talk about my experience. I probably saw them every month. I'd pop into New York and have a dinner, and I guess we were romancing each other. I wasn't really sure what they wanted. They weren't sure. And all of a sudden it popped up that the job that they really saw was to be president of the alloys division in Niagara Falls, because the guy that was running that, who was a curmudgeon, was going to retire in a year, and they didn't have a replacement. Then that started to focus on what that meant, where it was certainly a lot less upheaval. I didn't know a damn thing about the alloy business. I knew a little something about electric furnaces from my phosphorus experiences in Niagara Falls. And finally, they put together an offer that was very attractive. I started to spend some time with the guy that was the current president of the alloys division. He lived down the street from me. I had met him in town, but we really had never spent any time together. And felt that we probably could work together. And the company was very concerned because he was a different kind of cat. And I guess one of the skills I've had, and probably that comes from sales, is I do generally have the ability to get along with most kinds of people. It's one of the things you learn. I mean, in sales, you may have a customer who's a real pain in the ass, but he's still a customer, and you have to learn to live with him. And Norris McFarlane was not an easy guy, and I decided I would leave. And I mean, I had had all these faints, and it was a very, very difficult decision. But I'll tell you what helped me was that I didn't have to go out and compete with my friends, the guys I had worked with. And I would be in a completely new business, and I'd also find out whether I was any good. Because all of these people of the 20 years that I had promoted that were working under me support you. And, you know, they care for you, and you develop these great personal relationships. And so you get to the point where your success is a feature of the people you've brought along behind you and prop you up. Now you're going to go into company cold, and basically you don't know anybody. And you're about to find out how good you are. Well, it was an interesting experience. I mean, going in cold, I'm now, this is 1975, I'm 43 years old. Had a lot of experience overseas by now. I traveled a lot, never lived over there. Spent a lot of time in Europe, spent a lot of time in Japan. Both were strong market areas for ERCO. We had a plant in Sweden, did a lot of selling in the European steel industry. Steel was a major customer. Knew a lot of the steel people, again, back from my metals days in that industry marketing management job. So things kind of link up. McFarlane was willing and anxious to teach me the business. He was the consummate liquor type 1 manager. I mean, he was very autocratic. But he had some reasonable democracy for me. And we worked pretty well together. We made a pretty good team. He stayed around for a year. They made him chairman of the division. And within 6 months, I was basically running things, and he was slowing down. It went pretty well. The learning experiences of coming into an organization where several people wanted the job you've gotten is an interesting experience, too, and how you manage those people. I remember it was a fellow by the name of Bill Schneider, was the vice president of engineering, and he was absolutely convinced he should have had the job I got. And it was not easy working with him, but kept chipping away at it. And I remember, I'll tell you what happened ultimately, but when I was leaving, he came in to see me the day before I left, and he said, John, he said, you know damn well I wanted the job you got. And he said, I wanted that job, and I was bitter as hell when I didn't get it. And he said, I have to tell you, we've worked together for 4 years. You've taught me probably more than I've learned about business in the last 20. And he said, it's been a terrific experience. And he said, I just want you to know that you did a hell of a job here, and you were able to get people like me who weren't very happy about it pulling together as a team. So I felt pretty good about that. It was kind of an interesting statement coming from him. So we ran that business. It was a terrific business. I traveled a lot. Spent a lot of time in Europe. Went to Japan and did a lot of entertaining. It was, 90% of your business with the steel industry, and you had probably 20 customers. It wasn't very complicated business in that sense. You just had to make sure you got the order. And in that business, the top guy did the big selling. McFarlane did it, and I did it. You use the sales organization to kind of keep things in place and make sure things were going smoothly, but you brought in the big boss with a kill, and of course I loved that because I loved selling, and it was kind of fun getting back more hands-on than I had been in those days at Hooker. But that concluded because during that period of time, AERCO was partially owned by British Oxygen, who made a tender offer for the balance of the company. And the tender offer got hiked. They paid a lot of money for AERCO. And they decided they had to sell something. They decided to sell alloy business. And that was all right with me. They said, look, we'll work with you on this thing. We don't know how it's all going to sort out for you, but we want your cooperation. And I said, you know, fine. So Baldwin was given the assignment, my old buddy. Baldwin and I are given the assignment of trying to find buyers for this. So we worked over a period of some months trying to get things organized. And it looked as if it would be split in two parts. And back comes this Norris McFarlane from retirement. He wants to buy the chrome part. He wanted me to go with him. And SKW in Trostberg, Germany, wanted to buy the ferrosilicon business. And that's how it went. And that brings me to Olin, and maybe we'll just stop for a minute and sort of see where you might want to go from here if you want to backtrack on anything. I'm thinking about this period now, that just prior to Olin, 1975, by then I'm, how old, 43, I guess. And thinking about what lessons might have been learned during that time, and I've often reflected back on a lot of the people I've worked for. And you learn something from everybody. I mean, you learn from good bosses and you learn from bad bosses. And fortunately, I had very few bad bosses. I probably never really had, quote, a bad boss. I probably had some that were less skilled, maybe topped out. But even there, you get an example of the learning experience of things you shouldn't be doing, as opposed to the people that are very, very capable, where you learn the things you want to do. And frankly, as I said earlier, one of the things that the sales job does do for you, it teaches you how to more or less live with all sorts of personalities, and that may be the advantage that the sales guy has over the manufacturing guy. Manufacturing guys get very early supervisory experience, as I said earlier, where in the case of salespeople, sometimes they don't get that. You have leadership opportunities, but you don't have those managing opportunities. I remember, just to reflect on the time I was asked to become a sales manager, district sales manager. Jack Coey, who then later became the president of Hooker when I was a group vice president, said to me in that interview process, it was very interesting. He said, John, he said, this will be the biggest transition in your life. And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, up to this point, you've worked with people in a sales job. He said, from now on, anything you do, you will be managing people. And he said, that's a significant transition. And he said, a much bigger transition than a lot of people realize. And we talked about, in that interview, the risk of failure, and that frequently good salespeople do not make good sales managers. And got some very, very good counsel in that interview process. This brings us, as I said, sort of to the conclusion. There's lots more stuff you could probably ram in there, but there were several opportunities prior to 1975 and prior to 1970 to leave Hooker. But you know, there was a terrific bunch of people with that organization. And as I said, when you spend a good part of your lifetime working with and promoting those kinds of folks, it's very, very difficult to abandon them. I remember I called Jack Coey in December, early December of 1975, and said, I'd like to see you, Jack. It was unusual for me. He knew something, so I went up and told him that I had this opportunity to go to AERCO. And he said, I knew when you called that something was brewing. And he said, we talked about it. I told him what the job was, and it was a significant, I mean, I was going to become president of a major division now, of a major chemical company. And he finally said, this isn't easy for me, and I know it's not easy for you, but I'm going to tell you something, and I don't want to hear it again. He says, you're making a great decision to get out of this goddamn company. He says, yes. And I always felt badly because, ironically, we continued, as you know, to live in the Niagara Falls area, and it was shortly after that that Love Canal hit. What a mess that was. That would have probably destroyed me.
Had you known anything about Love Canal during your management years?
It's a funny thing. Love Canal was formally closed in 1953. I joined what became Hooker in 1954. I left in 75, and Love Canal hit the fan in 1977. Didn't even know it existed. I knew the guy that drew the documents, Art Chambers, who was one of our lawyers. And I remember, because I visited with Art after all that stuff started to fly around, and what a disaster that was. So when you think about fate plays a major role in these things, and how timing